Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
This is New Retirement Radio with the team from Prout Financial Design.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
And we have a studio full of financial professionals today. Namely, Mr. Dennis Prout is in from Prout Financial Design. It is New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580. Welcome back, sir.
It's great to be in. Thank you, Ron. On January 16th, 2020, the year of the election. You mentioned that earlier in the day. Oh, yeah. It is the election. And, of course, as you mentioned, Heidi Thompson joining us.
Good morning.
Fellow advisor. And Shea Pataja, our chief experience officer.
Hello.
Decision fatigue.
Yes,
decision
what is it?
Fatigue.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, deterioration of our ability to make good decisions after a long session of decision making. In other words, the more decisions you need to make, the worse they're going to be, you're going to tend to be, at weighing all the options and making an educated, research-backed choice. So decision fatigue can also occur, every day activities. It's amazing the number of choices that we have to make and the number of amount of information coming at us, but also in times of significant stress, deaths of loved ones, that sort of thing, where the key decisions can be dynamically increased in their importance and their long-term ability, their long-term positiveness, if you will, for you into the future. So we're going to talk about some of those and what I see. I remember when Dad passed away, we're trying to make the decision about the casket. And we walked into the casket room, if you will. I walked in. They started having the conversation. I walked right back out. It was the last thing I wanted to do, given everything else going on. And I thought, I don't want to give my input into this. Frankly, it's not, I sounds kind of harsh. I didn't think it was going to matter anyway. Frankly,
yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. You know?
So let them make that choice. I want to be involved in other things. So some of these things need to be made conscious decisions, if you will. What am I going to really concentrate on first? That's some of the result that you want to think about, and we'll talk about here today as well. So the why are we discussing this? Well, stepping back, it was a study over the weekend that I'm doing through the Yale School of Management. It's called the CPWA. It's another designation, Certified Private Wealth Advisor. And there was extensive information on biases that people have. Well, we didn't want to go into the detail on that because it gets really deep and it's more
super
like a
philosophical
2-hour class. But instead of the biases, we leaned more toward decisions, helping you, if you will, to make better decisions on your finances. And perhaps we'll get into a few of the biases if we have time here today. But the first thing is, what are some of the situations that I see with clients? Spouse passing away is another good example of, the surviving spouse coming in. Some of the advice that I would give right off the bat is bring a loved one with you, especially in this very difficult time, to help you make those decisions and get through that process, if that's applicable, and or even a friend. I've seen that as well. Now, if you're good at decision-making and you're clear about what it is that you want, you may not need this other person. I've seen very successful people with that as well. generally keep it simple in terms of how do I get these accounts transferred in the most effective, efficient way possible, number one. Number two, are there any things I should be aware of as a result of having transferred these? Would I want to make any decisions in this process that could possibly move those assets or help them move perhaps a bit better to second or contingent beneficiaries? That's another great point. So being aware of what can you do right now and what parts of those decisions should you think about or perhaps even sleep on, if you will. What do you need to do now and what can be waited on? What can I wait with?
Right, and so this came up because Dennis handed me the Yale study, which was awesome. It was super fun to read. And the thing that I honed in on was the decision-making fatigue, because I went to the Story Brand Conference over the summer, and it's about branding, but they go into the science of the brain and how people think.
Right.
So the brain can do two things. It's working to survive, survive and thrive. So every person's brain is tasked with keeping them alive. So we filter information right away when we make decisions as to whether or not we will survive or thrive. And if we don't think it's important, we let it go. But with today's technology also, you have decisions thrown at you all the time. People can text you. You've got to decide on their text. You've got your family. You're available during work, which back in the day, most people weren't available for 8 hours a day. So people reach decision fatigue by 2 o'clock. Right. They're exhausted. And we found two articles. One is by Rescue Time and the other one was Fast Company. So I want to give them credit because this is where the study also came from. And it says that after analyzing over 225 million hours of working time in 2017, Rescue Time found that the average user switches between tasks more than 300 times during their working hours.
That's
and
a lot.
So then people wonder why they're exhausted when it comes to thinking about money, even with all the apps that are available to help you manage your money. You know, how do you cut the decision time?
How do you decide which app to get?
Exactly. No, seriously, that's I've actually wrote them all out and tried to figure that out. So you go to Meijer. Like, how do you make a decision in Meijer? So,
right.
Like, what are you going to have for dinner that night?
You're tired by the time you get there. So that's the goal of the show, is to help you. Dennis and Heidi see people come in all the time who are just exhausted by all the decisions they have to make in life. And then they have to face financial decisions. And it's so complex at times. How do you cut the calories? So your brain, I also thought that was interesting at the conference. Your brain uses 600 to 800 calories a day. So it's trying to conserve energy. And if you can systemize some of these decisions, it makes it easier. So there's the deep philosophical dive on this.
There you go. Yeah. Appreciate the background, Shay. That's fantastic. So do the worst first is what I wrote down here. Set honest priorities for earlier in the day. Judges who were more likely to grant, were more likely to grant parole earlier in the day. It came out of these factors here.
They received parole 70% of the time if it was in the morning, while those who appeared late in the day were paroled less than 10% of the time.
So the judge like, yeah, no, you're going to jail next.
I'm tired.
10 years next.
So make sure you're there early in the day.
Yeah, right.
If you ever come up for parole, make sure it's in the morning.
Here. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So it does make a difference. So if you're making the, Zig Ziglar said, make the toughest phone call first part of the day. So it's out of your brain space, so you're able to work on things that matter the most.
Yeah.
Even though that may be a key phone call, obviously, work through that first. Work through the difficult tasks earlier in the day, because then you'll have more brain space to work through the less important ones, and you'll get more done, obviously, as a part of it.
That would make sense, too, like if you're in a crisis situation and you come in to see your advisor, your attorney, someone, make that earlier in the morning versus waiting till the end of the day when
you're
exhausted.
You may decide to do that. And because those decisions can be even more important in certain situations, what can I wait on and what do I need to do now would maybe be a great place to start. And what do I need to be aware of that could I possibly have an opportunity for these assets that I wasn't aware, given that the spouse has passed away or other loved one?
So what do you see? Like, you mentioned that when spouses come in and one has dementia, or one is physically ill, that they then, all the decision-making responsibility is on them, when it used to be the two of them. What type of decision-making fatigue do you see when they come to see you?
Well, they may want to simplify their situation significantly for a while to where they don't have to make as many decisions, perhaps, because they've got this other huge health event going on with a spouse. And there may not, that may make some sense in certain situations where they need to simplify their decisions on the financial side as well. That in that particular instance, you also want to avoid going too far one way, of course. You know, am I going to hurt myself financially by trying to oversimplify my situation? Instead of selling the house and moving right away, given that something has happened to the spouse, consider holding off on that even for a couple of 3 months so that your perspective can change. You don't, in many cases, you really do have more time than you may believe. Mm-hmm. And time is a variable that can be used much to your advantage if you understand what are all my options here. How can I push back time if this might wind up hurting me financially? Now, in some cases, you're going to say, I don't care. I need to simplify. Well, if that's the case, then go ahead and make the decision. Just understand that it's going to cost, it could cost you quite a bit of money and expense physically as well, just making all those changes.
Well, I would just say too, Dennis, that I feel like this is a place where you and I help people as well, because by establishing a relationship with your financial advisor and you can trust them and you have a working relationship, you can lean on them and people will come to us and say, I just can't make that decision right now. What do you recommend? Can we just do that right now? So by building up a team that you trust when you're in these periods where you have to make so many decisions. And what this discussion brings to my mind is my dad was ill for about a year before he passed away. And you go to the hospital and you're just inundated with decisions about care and equipment and picking up prescriptions and all this logistics that, you know, my dad actually said to me at one point, he's like, I'm glad I moved everything over to you guys, because you know what? I don't even have to think about that because I know that you guys are taking care of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what came to my mind this morning when we were having this discussion, because we definitely were in decision fatigue mode at that point. And just being able to rely on some of those relationships can help you through it.
A huge deal. And it's hard to put ourselves in that place. One of the quotes was Barack Obama had two suits that he wore.
Blue and gray.
I guess that's a fine. But given the amount of stress that any president is under, I can see him doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs wore one outfit because it was a minor part of his day. He had bigger things or bigger fish to fry, if you will.
One less decision.
I love that.
Absolutely.
I go into stores and if there's any choice to be made, it bowls me over. I just said, just give me A or B. It's all I can handle. There's so many choices for everything.
What kind of noodle should I want with that soup? I have no idea.
Yes. Yeah, well, and I think sometimes, too, when people are in a situation, especially a crisis situation, not only do they have to make decisions, they have to learn. So you have to learn first, then make a decision. Yeah. It's not like you're making decisions on things you already know about, and that's even more stressful. So,
sometimes it's a slower process. We might have a meeting with a surviving spouse, have meetings 4-5 times to walk through again the processes and what the options are, discussions with children, you know, really counseling and walking that through. Sometimes it just takes longer, but my gosh, what a huge difference it can make for the survivor. We were talking about this almost jokingly before the show. In fact, Heidi was meeting with another group, and I jokingly said, "Well, you know, are they gonna do a qualified disclaimer in this particular asset?" And we were no, that wasn't a part of the conversation. Well, just understanding that you have a lot of different choices to make that could make a financial difference. Just knowing that can be in and of itself. Well, okay, I say I could do that, but for right now, that doesn't make sense for me. How much time do I have to make that decision? Well, in this particular case, perhaps 6 months, whatever it is, knowing that you can push back time. Time, again, that can be the huge, almost exponentially valuable to you. and knowing what you need to do now. Well, we need some money. And for instance, we need cash for the funeral. What does that look like? Where's it going to come from? How are you going to do that? How are you going to push back time again by making the financial decisions you have to right now and pushing back some of the more complex ones, perhaps even to 3 to 6 months, can make a huge difference. So Heidi, in the second portion here, is going to be discussing five simple steps for successful retirement saving. So simplifying the fatigue, if you will.
That's right. So one of
words of the day.
One of Dennis's points was simplifying can help you with that decision fatigue. So looking at this article that came from the Ramsey website, Consumer Reports reported that only 28% of investors age 55 and older are highly satisfied with the way that they save for retirement. So only 28%. One of their top regret, I thought this was interesting, is that they didn't start saving earlier. So the number one regret.
It is, and that's interesting. I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you there. Oh, so did you finish that thought?
Yep.
It's interesting approaching this, a conversation I had yesterday with a client. He says, you know, I've got my Corvette ordered. Which account should I draw this from, Dennis? That is a lot more fun than having to worry about where the next dollar is coming from. Obviously, we get that. But it is much more fun. And I said to him, you have done a great job at saving. Isn't it fun to be able to make this decision and actually be worried about the tax consequence? What is the tax? How much are you going to owe in tax to do this? And I've got a Roth here and I've got a regular IRA here. Having that diversification of strategy, tax consequence, but the money is there to be able to make that decision. Huge.
I think, too, a lot of people, like we were talking yesterday, Dennis, is that they're waiting for this moment where they make enough money to start saving for retirement. And they put it off year after year. When I make more, I'll save more. But what they don't realize is the most valuable thing they have is time.
Right.
Over the size of that paycheck in the future that may or may not come.
They're waiting for that feeling to happen before the activity.
Mm, right.
And the problem is the feeling only happens after the activity has begun. So you're often going to be somewhat uncertain. Understand that it's not going to be that exciting. There's not going to be, you know, it's not romantic, if you will. You're not going to ride on a white horse off into the sunset just because you saved another $50 into your 401k plan. Okay? Ho-hum, right? It's not that exciting, but oh my gosh. Once you begin to see that grow, the effect of compounding, which Heidi is always hitting that, you know, always talking about that. But just the effect that you actually saved, you make a great point there, Shay. So save first, let the feelings come later.
How big of a challenge is that to communicate that, though, to, I'll say, young people in their 20s, when you get out of college, or if you don't go to college, you start your working life?
It's
ideally
tough.
You should start putting money away, especially if you have a 401k plan with your employer.
Yeah. Yes.
But how do you get that through those young, thick skulls that it's a smart thing to do? You won't notice right away. But 30 years from now, you'll be so happy.
Well, a friend of mine's daughter graduated this year, and she had a ton of money for her party, right?
Right.
So I Googled for her compound. If she started a Roth IRA with some of that money, it could be just what it takes to open it, $250 at 18 years old. And if she put $5 in it a month, that's it. Can you live without one coffee a month, not a week, a month, you know? So
it's still way out there.
Yes.
You say there, that's a great benefit. I'll start tomorrow or I'll start next month.
Well,
but
she did. She opened, she took some of that money and she opened a Roth because when I showed her
what happens,
and because I'm just enough older than her, but younger than her parents,
right?
I think she believed me because
in high school, don't you think that ought to be required, the compound interest lesson?
I wish
lesson?
They would.
Just some basic financial planning concepts because of all the responsibility that's been shifted to individuals.
When I was that age, you know, I'm going to say, it's a great idea. I think I'll save. But like Shay said, when I make more money, I'll start saving.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not about making more money. It's about simply making those choices now where you're putting aside some money And then possibly even increasing it into the future. So hit the next points, Heidi.
Man, you got us fired up there.
So this is a great intro for step one. Step one is just taking a percentage of what you're making and actually putting it in a savings account or an IRA or some kind of vehicle to start that discipline of saving, which moves us right into the second one, is take advantage, if you're working, take advantage of that employer plan and put that money in either the 401k, the simple, the SEP, whatever IRA you have available to you, whatever options available to you to start putting the money in. And a point to make, we've talked about this a lot on the show, a lot of employers do offer a match. So if they offer you a match, you put in their dollar, they put in a dollar for you, you've doubled your money on day one. And that can just add to that compounding, then you're compounding on $2 instead of the $1.
There's almost no investment that can match that rate of return. 100% on your investment from the get-go, one by one. Pretty good.
Pretty simple math, too. Even I get it.
And for those younger investors, don't forget to look for a Roth option if you have a 401k at work. If you don't have a 401k option, say you have a simple plan, you can open your own Roth IRA and contribute to both of those kinds of accounts, the simple and the Roth. So start growing those pools of money from the get-go. And like Shay said, I love that. Even $5, $10 a month, that's if they're matching, that's $20 a month. So it can really make a difference over time. And it's the discipline of actually doing it. That's the hardest thing to start.
I think that the habit in the brain is really good, because if you're not investing, it's always, you always have this like little bit of guilt, like, I should be investing, but I'm not, you know. And if you're doing $5, you can at least say you've got some skin in the game. It removes some of that.
But if you can have it deducted, like you said, if you have a plan or something else like that, because no one thinks about their taxes. They just think, I made this much, but I only get this much. Because the taxes are deducted automatically. If you had your retirement savings deducted automatically, you wouldn't think about it.
And you'll pay less tax, too.
Well, there you go.
So turn it into almost a left-handed activity where it's automatically coming out of your check. And keep in mind that there is no income limitation for those who are 401k participants and want to put money into the Roth. So if you previously thought, well, I can't do a regular Roth IRA because our incomes are too high, the Roth 401k has no income limitation. All right.
Okay.
Heidi.
Okay. The next one is spread your money around. So what that means really is what we call diversification. So you don't want to have all your money maybe just in one stock or something. So a good choice when you're starting out, it might be a mutual fund. Mutual fund invests, that fund invests in hundreds of different things. And so you can get diversified right off the bat. But then you can also diversify among mutual funds. So you can choose different mutual funds. Growth stock mutual funds are great when you're younger, when you have that timeline in front of you. There's aggressive growth stocks, there's growth in income funds, or there's also international. And that spreading it among these different things gives you a nice diversification, right?
It does. It's a way to improve your rate of return and generally control the risk associated with each. So pay attention to how you've allocated those funds. The biggest way that you'll gain wealth through these plans is actually having invested. That's the key component on a monthly basis. But then the next part of it is, how is it allocated? Am I taking advantage of the various investments I have within those accounts? Can improve your rate of return, not dramatically in the short term, over the long term. 1-3% makes a huge difference in terms of compounding.
Right. And then our fourth point is stick with it. So when the market goes down, maybe it's not a good season in the market, and you're putting in more and you're losing more than you're putting in, you're seeing that market value decline. But you want to stick with it because you're actually buying more with that same amount of money because the prices are lower. So you're buying more when the market comes back up, then you will move ahead more quickly because you have more shares of stock.
A good example is what happened at the end of 2018. The market was down by about 20% from October through almost to the end of December. that was an incredible V formation and an incredible opportunity in retrospect to stay or stick with a strategy. Right. Now, obviously, we don't see those a lot. Since 1945, we've seen about 19 of those, but that was a dramatic reversal with significant opportunity. Some missed it. Those who bailed, got out, frankly, they're sorry today, but those who were able to ride with that with some volatility in the portfolio is your friend. Right. The end.
Is that called dollar cost averaging?
That is part of it.
Wow, Shay.
I'm getting there.
You must listen to New Retirement Radio.
I'm getting there.
Well, there is one statistic here that might be interesting. So between the years of 2004 and 2014, people who left their money in, on average, this is just an average, received a 15% gain.
So you survived that 08, 09,
right.
2010.
That's the key there. Right in the middle, we had that huge decline. But even with that, people came out on the right side at that end of that 10-year period on the positive side. So just keep with it. Keep going. Don't just panic and stop investing because there is a downturn in the market. You want to keep investing. Just keep that dollar cost averaging going. And then our final tip is talk with a professional, an investment counselor or a financial advisor. And a lot of 401k plans will include as part of the package the ability either to call an advisor. People who have their plans with us, they can come in and talk to Dennis and I about their financial plans and just get a checkup and say, am I investing in the right things? Am I investing enough? Take advantage of those that are no extra cost to you, those platforms where you can get that advice and maybe improve your situation that way. So that's
brilliant.
Those are our top five tips.
So number three, focus on momentum. Here we go. Not willpower. Psychologists call this the Zeigarnik effect. Once we start a task, our brain becomes obsessed with finishing it. Smart, eh? The most simple example is how Ernest Hemingway would always finish his writing day mid-sentence. Mid-sentence. I think it's a great concept here. The best way is always to stop when you're going good and when you know what will happen next. If you do that every day, you'll never be stuck. So he'd always stop in the middle of the sentence, and he always had pictured what is the next step. And then he had to think about it the next day. He was already moving towards it and was then on to the next part of the story in his own mind so that obviously then he could complete it.
Sort of like jump starting.
Yes.
Good for writers, but maybe not for like a guy on the radio, Dennis.
Yeah, I know. This is what I was thinking. That way your subconscious will work on it all the time. But if you think about it consciously or worry about it, you'll kill it and your brain will be tired before you start. So using the subconscious to help you solve problems, I've seen this again and again, present, if you will, your brain or your mind to the problem and let it set. Let it set. It's amazing how the solutions can come to you over time. Let that old brain work. The gray cells. Poirot, that's what that's from, in case you were wondering.
Poirot.
Yes. Number four, lock in big decisions when your motivation and willpower are high. So momentum is huge. Continue to work on momentum, whether it's your writing or it's a new business, perhaps. Lock in big decisions when your motivation and willpower are high. Rather than being susceptible to your changing energy levels, lock in key decisions when your energy is highest. Take a look at when am I doing the best? Well, it might be 11 o'clock in the morning, perhaps. For me, between 10 and 11 is usually when my energy is best, frankly.
Boom.
Frankly,
right now.
Right now.
So lock in those big decisions then. What is it we want to do? How we want to go forward? What's going to make the most sense? And some people would say, Dennis, you should do a SECURE Act on February 19th. So we're doing it.
Again. There you go.
We
ask
also
and you
have
shall
some,
receive.
Other classes that were coming up, but Shay is not letting us announce it yet.
You are going to have to wait with
very excited
breath.
About that. We are announcing it to our clients, and you'll be getting notification of that event. But publicly, we're waiting a bit more. So using momentum, understanding that decision fatigue can really get in the way, and how do I make those decisions? And then the biases. The biases are going to have to wait for the coming weeks, where we will discuss as we go along some of those biases that can get in the way of good decision-making, making good investment decisions over time. In fact, one of them was what Heidi mentioned in terms of the 401k. John Bogle had a great quote. He was used to be the head of Vanguard Funds, and we were talking to some of their people, their representatives, who had had personal conversations or recommendations from their own money management team. And they came to see us. This was a few months back. Frankly, this is when Bogle is still alive, probably more like a year ago. And Bogle had just made the statement that one shouldn't really consider international funds. Just stick with the S&P 500. That'll do you fine. You don't need to get into the international sector. Well, they then, the representatives from Vanguard, who came to see us, said almost the exact opposite. And they were talking about the advantage of having international in the portfolio because of its low relative returns recently and the lower risk now that those particular funds had and their better potential rate of return given that lower risk and potential for the future. And I said, well, you know, your president, John Bogle, just came out with a statement and totally disagrees with you. And he said, well, he didn't talk to our people. No, they didn't talk to us. So what are we?
He just
say?
Runs the company. He doesn't talk to the people. Yeah.
So those biases can get in your way in the long term. Listen to a variety of advisors and think about a variety of investments to help you achieve your goals. That's where you're going to be best served in the long term.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.